Primos y primas, que lo que, welcome, bienvenidos to the Dear Gotta Be There Yet, the podcast con tu prima favorita, soy Alicia Sanchez, and yes, this podcast is bilingual, empowering social good one conversation at a time, sharing weekly insights and inspirations from people adding their magic to make this world a better place. Whether you want to learn more about volunteer travel, being more socially conscious, or you love a good conversation that breaks down barriers while evoking pasión and emoción, this is the podcast for you. Grab a cafecito y vamos a hablar. Primos y primas, que lo que, bienvenidos to the Dear Gotta Be There Yet, the podcast. Y ya tú sabes, con tu prima favorita, Alicia. Now, if you're new to this podcast, will find out that this is a bilingual podcast. Why? Because ya tú sabes, I have to speak a little Spanish for my Latino community, and I like to add a little flavor. But because podcast world is so different, and we're making a space for all types of cultures, this is why I have to make sure that I have a little bit of Spanish, and our guest today speaks a little Spanish too, a lot of Spanish, not a little bit, so we'll make sure we keep both languages. Don't forget to check out the other podcast episodes. And before we get into anything, thank you so much for all our new volunteers in our profiles. I'm like so excited. Yo no puedo hablar hoy. Yo no sé. La prima está con, no sé, porque estoy tan contenta, emocionada. I'm so excited because so many of you have sent us messages about the impact that you are doing from home, that you never thought that you could actually volunteer from home. You know that with times of changing, you gotta just roll with the punches. So thank you to everybody volunteering. So today I have someone super amazing on the podcast, un primo favorito de nosotros from live. Espérate. Ray, explícame un momentico. Espérate. How do you say the name of your brand? Is it Live Lingua o qué? Dígame.
Live Lingua. Normalmente lo decimos como Live Lingua.
Ah, Live Lingua. Okay, so yeah. Everybody, I have Ray from Live Lingua here. And I know a lot of you are going to be like, wait, what is this? So I'm going to just give the mic to Ray. And Ray, tell us a little bit about you and what you do and the magic that you're bringing to the world.
Awesome, Alicia. Thanks for having me here. So let's see. Let's give you guys the 30-second tour. My name is Ray Blakeney. I do speak a little bit of Spanish, but I'm not Latino. I get confused for Latino all the time because I'm half Filipino. So oh. I was born in the Philippines. I grew up in Turkey. My dad's from the United States, blonde, blue-eyed, 6 foot tall. But he grew up in Africa, and I live in Mexico because my wife's Mexican. So that's why I speak Spanish. My son's, I guess, Mexican too. So, you know, awesome. Even though he doesn't talk yet, so it doesn't really count.
But wait, Filipino, isn't it? Is the language Tagalog? Is it Tagalog?
There are over 700 languages in the Philippines. Tagalog is the biggest one. Cebuano is the other one. They're kind of neck and neck. Most people with college educations will speak English. They use some Spanish words, but there's like an interesting history behind that, right? Where they learned to speak Spanish, but the Spanish never taught them how to read and write. They didn't learn how to read and write until the Americans came, the American missionaries, like in the early 1900s. So they were using these Spanish words, but the American missionaries didn't know how to spell them. So when they taught them how to read and write, they spelled them all wrong. So like all the Spanish words, domingo has two G's, jueves is with an H, you know, because it sounds like an, you know, huh, in English, right? So they spell jueves with an H. Sábado's got like two D's in it. It's almost unrecognizable.
That's insane. And you know, it's like, I say this too, and sometimes even in the French language, there's some things that sounds the same, but they mean the same things. But I think that culture and languages kind of interconnect. Don't you have that experience where you see
absolutely
certain words?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the worst thing about it is when somebody's like learning a language is a false cognate. What I tell people, when I was learning Spanish and I came to Mexico, I was embarazado for 3 months until somebody told me that did not mean embarrassed. So there's a lot of ways to make a fool of yourself when you're learning another language.
And for y para todo el mundo que está escuchando, they're going to be like, yes, Alicia, this is so true. I'm Dominican. So our Spanish is completely different from Mexican. Not to say that we don't understand each other. We do. But even our vocabulary is very different. So from Puerto Rican, Dominicans, Cuban, I think even South America, they say certain different words. I mean, I lived in Spain and you don't say the word gozar in Spain. You just don't say that. Now, Dominicans, we say, vamos a gozar, vamos a fiesta. And it's totally different. different. So for everybody listening, you're probably thinking, yes, I agree.
Oh, it's the same when we went to Spain. You know, in Mexico, you don't say coger un coche. That means something totally different in Mexico than it does when you go to Spain. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So tell us this magic that you are doing, because first of all, it all happens in the Peace Corps, right? You and your wife. And that connects with me because I applied to go to the Peace Corps 1,000,000,000 times. Yes, but I was denied because, which I don't have a problem with saying why. It was, I'm a cancer survivor. So there was a lot of, health reasons why I wasn't able to go. But the magic that the Peace Corps brings. So tell me about that and I want you to share this magic to our community because it happened in the Peace Corps and now you're still giving back. And tell us.
So the Peace Corps is a huge part of my life. Huge part. Mm-hmm. I was actually born in the Peace Corps. My dad was American and went to the Peace Corps in the Philippines. My mom was Peace Corps staff in the Philippines. That's how they met. So my mom's job was to, teach Tagalog and Cebuano to the Americans who came over and introduced them to the culture. So that's how they met. They got married 6 weeks after meeting each other. I found that out when I was 30. They've been married for 45 years, so it worked out. But I was like, wow, obviously you don't tell that to your kids because you don't necessarily want them following in that footstep. So they got married. I was born while my dad was still a Peace Corps volunteer. He still had a year left. So the Peace Corps is 2 to 3 years, depending on how long you decide to stay. And I was born in the Peace Corps. So I've known about the Peace Corps my whole life. But so, I went to college, studied computer engineering. And then I did what everybody's supposed to do, right? You get out of college, you get a job at a corporate place, and you're supposed to work there 40 years in a cube. I did that for 4 or 5 years, and I was like, no, I'm not doing this the rest of my life, right? I mean, there's got to be more to the world than this, than helping a big multimillion-dollar company sell more products. Yeah. So I quit. I had almost a six-figure job, as a computer engineer, and I quit, and I joined the Peace Corps for a few $100 a month, and they sent me to Mexico. So I kind of ended up coming down here. I met my wife, who was also Peace Corps staff, who was in charge of teaching us the language and the culture. And that's how I ended up in Mexico. And we've just kind of been here ever since.
Wow. Pero esa agua en el Peace Corps, ¿qué es lo que esa agua tiene algo, una magia? I think everybody, we need to go drink that water from the Peace Corps because
it's not an amazing experience, right? The organization's wonderful, right? They send people overseas. You don't do it for the money, obviously. They pay you just enough to live at the level of the people you're working with. So generally speaking, you're kind of comfortable for the region, right? You get sent to a small village. You might only make $100 a month, but you can't really spend the $100 a month if you're in a small village in the mountains of Ecuador or in Africa or in, Pacific Island somewhere. It's more than you need. And you spend those 2 years trying to kind of – the biggest thing you do in the Peace Corps is build relationships with the community because a lot of these countries or these communities have the idea of the United States that they see in the movies. And that's it. Like the only, or that in the news or in the government propaganda in their countries. So your main job is to go there and kind of introduce them to what really an American really is. And then you're supposed to learn their culture and bring that back. They cover it all up. They, you will do education in schools, you'll do other jobs. But really, in my opinion, the big thing about the Peace Corps is about bringing the world together. It's not necessarily about, hey, I helped a well. That's great, but that's not the real contribution that the Peace Corps does in the long term. That well may dry up in 4 or 5 years, but the memory of, hey, that Peace Corps volunteer that was here when I was a kid will stay with the children you help or even the adults you help for the rest of their lives.
And I love that. I love that you said that because, a lot of people correlate Peace Corps to like mission trips and I have nothing against with a certain type of mission trip. I am against people coming into a country and giving someone a cup of water and saying, I help the world. I mean, poverty is very complex. So I love the way that you said that. And your brand with Live Lingua is actually bringing people together. That's exactly what you're doing through language. And tell me, what was the inspiration behind that as well?
Well, that was exactly it. So, I've grown up, I was lucky enough to grow up speaking multiple languages, and I saw how it brought cultures together. And my wife is a trained language teacher. She's a Spanish and English teacher. She studied in the United States, so she speaks English. But she's, she teaches Spanish as well to foreigners for, 10 years when I've met her, 20 years right now, she's been doing it. And we see how when you learn a language, there's a lot more than the words, right? And I think that's where like schools get it wrong in the United States. I took French since I was in kindergarten. I can't speak a word of it because all I did was conjugate verbs, right? When you learn Spanish, you conjugate ser, estar, and haber for months and months on end. And nobody speaks it because they don't teach you the culture. If you really want to learn to speak a language, you need to know what's behind it. Why do Mexicans say mande when they mean, when they're saying, when they don't hear you?
That's
even though the word actually is, it's it's order me, or, you know, give me an order. But there's actually this whole cultural baggage behind that. You need to learn that for languages really to make sense. So that's how we actually decided to start LiveLingua. There were all these business things behind it as well. But we saw from personal experience, it brought my wife and I together. And we've been together now for 12 years. Awesome. And we saw that we could do that for the rest of the world. So LiveLingua actually started as an online Spanish school. We were lucky. We got successful. We have no, you know, we don't have rich parents. Nobody gave us money. So we started it for $60 from our house. And I answered the emails and my wife gave the first lessons. But now we're the third largest online language school in the world. And that gives us a voice and gives us an opportunity to give back even more. So in addition to the languages, we have a program where we keep smaller languages from being, from disappearing. So we have something called the LiveLingua Project. So you go to that part of our website, entirely free. Nothing. We don't charge you a thing. We don't ask for your email, nothing. You go in there and we'll have like Quechua courses. We have, you know, Hausa courses from Africa, all of that stuff entirely for free. Because I contacted the Peace Corps and I got every course they've ever created and I put it up on there because it's all public domain. I just kind of called them up. They sent it, sent me boxes. We scanned it in. We threw it up there and kept it there. And we also sponsor children through Save the Children. So a portion of like the classes you take go to sponsor kids. Our goal is to sponsor 100 children every year. We're not quite there yet, but we'd like to get up there.
I love that. And now I want to ask you about COVID because, you know, the business model must have had change, like what, and probably redesigning how you do all of this. Have you, tell us about that. What are you guys doing in order to, you know, I mean, for us, we had to stop, we can't travel, so we can't go anywhere, but we can do virtual volunteer opportunities. So how do you guys do this with the speaking and all that stuff?
Yeah, so we were really lucky. We've actually been a digital virtual business since we started. We have no offices. We have no physical location anywhere. We have a registered address in Boston in the United States, and that's where I pay my taxes. But otherwise, we have over 150 staff and contractors, and we're all virtual. So I'm happy to say that, you know, we're lucky that our business went up, but that means we're able to support over 150 teachers all over the world, are still able to pay their rent and support their families now because of the way we've operated before. I would love to say that we planned this all out, you know, ahead of time. We did not. It just worked out this way. But a lot of people have moved to online learning, and LiveLingua is luckily we've seen a big spike from that. And so we've been able to bring on even more teachers who lost their jobs, you know, in Mexico, in Latin America, and all around the world. And they're still able to work now as a result of LiveLingua. We actually started because of swine flu. That's why LiveLingua started. So, you know, I guess our business model was built around a global pandemic and, you know, we're prepared for this one as well.
What would you say the number, like, I love how you said that you have to understand the culture. So someone takes a class, you know, a class with you. For me, I'll give you an example. Like for me, Portuguese has been something that I've been just so in love with. I've taken classes on like, I can just go on and on where I take them. But when it's time for me to speak, I get so shy and so nervous. And I'm not a shy person at all, clearly. But every time someone speaks to me in Portuguese, like, oh, como vai? And I'm like, I want to say the words. Like, what do you say to people like that, especially for, you know, a lot of my listeners that might be listening that they've said they want to actually learn a new language? This is like the perfect time too, but what would you say to that?
I would say your problems and your challenges are very, very common, and we find that this generally happens with people who are more used to being expressive and being able to kind of express their ideas with words. So let's say generally people who are more highly educated actually have more issues with it. So if you have a PhD, people stumble with this a lot more. The reason being is when you're at kind of a certain level, you're used to being able to express yourself very well. Like Alicia, obviously, you know, you're very comfortable talking in front of the crowd. And then suddenly you have this language where you sound like a one-year-old. Yes! And you get super self-conscious. You're right. You're like, really, believe me, I'm a smart person, even though I sound like I don't know what I'm saying anything right now. That is a huge stumbling block that a lot of students run into. And that's what our teachers help you kind of work your way through. So they kind of build their conversation up to a point where before you even know it, because we use the language immersion method, it's how I learned Spanish in the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. Before you even know it, you're starting, you're speaking Portuguese. So before you've been put into that situation, you know, you get into the situation again, you're already speaking with your teacher, so kind of flipping and speaking to somebody else is not that big a deal. But it's this gradual process, because the issue with a lot of these things, let's say you took courses at a local community college or you used apps, which don't really work, but you know, we can have a whole conversation on those.
Oh yeah, no, they don't.
Yeah, exactly. You get vocabulary words, but you are not going to speak a language after, you know, you're spending 10 minutes a day on the app, just like you're not going to get six-pack abs for doing 5 minutes of sit-ups every day. It's simply not going to work. But you need the practice, and you need to be able to get to start thinking in that language. And usually for most people in the world, I'm sure there's some exceptions, like a teacher is the way to do that. One-on-one lessons is the way to do it. So you're not like going in a group and maybe there's somebody faster than you who, you know, sucks all the air out of the room because they're just answering everything. Or maybe there's somebody so slow that everybody's bored in the class. So it's kind of a way to do the languages.
You mentioned something about immersion. Explícame eso. ¿Qué es lo que significa eso? The immersion type way.
Yeah. So what we do with the language is immersion is, again, in the Peace Corps, what we did. And my first business after the Peace Corps was we actually had a brick and mortar school in Mexico, right? So people would come to Mexico and we kind of built it on this immersion model. Immersion means that kind of we get you to start thinking in the language by, exposing you not only to the language, but the culture. So our teachers teach in that methodology, right? Where they're, instead of saying, again, conjugate these verbs, fill out these sentences. They put you in scenarios, right? Okay, today we're practicing going to the market. I'm somebody in the market. You need to buy these five products. Let's learn the vocabulary word for these, you know, zanahorias, tomates, cebollas, you know, something really common that you would do. Let's role play in this situation. How would you order? How would you negotiate for a price? How would you get the price down? That's getting you to think in that language, right? It's not fill this out, let's do that, right? It's all about communicative, and it doesn't matter when you're speaking. Believe me, you don't have to get everything right. I get prepositions right wrong all the time. I think I still say, what's it, la problema half the time, and my wife's like, no. I think she has a saying, what is it?
El
problema es masculino y la solución es femenina, I think is the one that she's, so she keeps saying that one to me, but it still doesn't stick in my head. But people don't care in the street, right? When you're ordering at the market or a restaurant, nobody will not understand me if I say la problema. They'll know exactly what I'm saying. They're like, that's not quite right, but they'll continue to do it. So we try to teach that to our students. It's about communication. It's about understanding when they speak to you. It's about, you know, other people understanding when you speak to them. Don't worry if don't put the accent on the wrong thing or you use said instead of estar in a sentence. Most people will understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I love that because it's so true, especially with Portuguese. I say to myself, okay, that's not Spanish, but that's not English. But then if I do speak it, you know, they'll give me like a little lesson, like you just said, like when you just think of it every time you're ordering something, say it this way, and I'm like, oh, okay, why do these little apps tell me that?
That's it. I mean, nobody's gonna make fun of you. That's not the way it works, right? I mean, everybody. In fact, you know, we're talking about all this kind of bringing cultures together. People appreciate it when you make the effort to learn their culture. I just recently went to Thailand. Well, recently being the last, in October, the last time I was able to get on a plane, I was in Thailand, right? So I took a basic survival course before going there with the numbers and how to say thank you and good morning. And I probably was massacring the pronunciation because it's a tonal language. But people always smiled when you were able to say thank you, to a waiter, or you were able to say good morning when you passed somebody there. Nobody said, wow, your pronunciation's awful. No.
Yeah.
They just kind of looked at you and they're like, thank you for taking the time to learn a little bit about our culture.
I love that. And that is something that, especially with our volunteer travel, is something that's so important that I add for the trips. When people say, well, are you mission trips? They're like, hold on. We're not taking anything away from anyone. It's all about learning about cultures. When you are learning about a culture, you're broadening your mind. You're learning more about yourself and how you are inside this world, how you benefit. I wanted to ask you, have you ever thought about opening a charity or doing something
Absolutely. In fact,
share we're with looking, us.
Oh, absolutely. So the dream of my wife and I is right now we're kind of in the business mode, right? So we have some online businesses. You know, we even ran a chocolate factory in the Philippines for a few years. We're trying to get enough savings so that we can start a social organization ourselves. So actually, let me rephrase that. No, we're not looking to start a charity. We want to start a social enterprise because I don't want to have to go out looking for grants. I don't want to have to go out and begging for money for this organization to continue. A social enterprise hopefully can make its own income back, reinvest it back in there. But it's kind of this more, virtuous cycle than it is, hey, let's apply for grants today. And hopefully the USAID will give us another $5,000 so we can survive another 6 months. That's not how I'd run a business. And I don't want to run our charity that way. So what we're going to do for the charity is we actually want to help people start small businesses online. The actual methodology of this that we're still working on, we're kind of experimenting with some people in the Philippines and the rest of it, and here in Latin America as well. The idea is simple. If you want to build an online business that makes, you know, about $400 or $500 a month, you could, I can do that pretty successfully about 90% of the time in about a year. Now, to anybody in the United States, they'd be like, $500 a month? I wouldn't work a year to 2 years to build that. And you're absolutely right. But if you lived in the Philippines, if you lived in Africa, if you lived in, you know, many parts of Latin America and Southeast Asia, $500 a month is the difference between poverty and middle upper class. There are all these niches online where people can kind of build these businesses. These days, you don't need to be a programmer anymore. There are all these tools out there to kind of build it and throw it up for free. And that's the organization we want to build. Train people on how to do this and manage these online businesses. For example, you know, an artisan in Kenya who's never been, right now is probably suffering, right? Because they can't sell anything. There's no tourism. There's nothing going on. Imagine if we gave them the basic ability, maybe even on their cell phones, to just manage a basic e-commerce store. People buy it. It appears. There's some kind of system we put in place that the money gets to him and he's able to kind of put it in a box and ship it to somebody in some other part of the world, probably for a much higher price than he's ever going to get locally on whatever he's building. And that could easily generate $500 for him, right? You know, a great carving in Mexico, $10. That's, you know, that's not too much to ask for somebody in the United States. They're like, yeah, sure. I'll pay $10 for that. But there's just no connection between these people and the actual buyers around the world. So that's kind of the idea we have, is to try to train people to do this. And part of the way it would work is, you know, we get a 10% investment in your business. Mm-hmm. So it's like microfinancing, but on a business level. Exactly. So we invest in you. We teach you how to do it. You build a business that makes $500 a month, but $50 comes back to us as investors. And then we reinvest that in the next cohort of classes. And, you know, that kind of builds our business up. Eventually, we'll have a portfolio of like the 1,000 small $500 businesses. But that would be enough for us to build schools to teach this kind of thing around the world.
I love that. I love that you're providing the tools. You know, I always talk about this when it comes to social impact and why the reason why I even got involved. I mean, I came from a totally different industry, fashion industry, and just the waste and just so many things in that industry. And I always say, like, we can help people learn how to do certain things so that they can self-sustain themselves and teach and, you know, go get over that generational curse of like, I can't do this because I don't have this. And I love how you're getting to the core of the issue, which is mindset. So I absolutely love that. And Ray, if you guys need volunteers, we have volunteers that have expertise. You know, it could be the mom next door who actually built her own blog and she can help, or it can be a CEO of a company that he wants to do extra time. Like, let us know if you ever need volunteers. We are here for you. That, which is amazing. My last question for you, what would you say is your, and this is a funny quiet one, what would you say is your superpower?
Oh, I actually know that one. And
you do?
Yeah, I do. I do. I realized this. So I'll give you the story, my origin story of how I figured out what my superpower is.
Gosh, so, I'm ready to hear this because known this.
Yeah. So, but unfortunately, my superpower is the most boring superpower in the world. So I'll start with that caveat. Okay. So I went to this small conference up, I think it was in Denver. And one of the activities they had at this conference, this was 5 or 6 years ago, it was, I think, the second conference I've ever been to. And they had an activity where they were kind of trying to time planning or something like that. Mm. So they gave us these little post-it notes and it's like, okay, everybody, you know, on a post-it note, put down one activity you do every day and kind of put it in order. So you can just kind of put out what your normal day is like, right? So kind of what your normal day is. So I'm like, okay, this is kind of strange. So I kind of go down, I start writing, you know, okay, wake up 6 a.m., meditate 15 minutes from 6:15, you know, from 6:15 to 6:30, go to the gym, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I kind of write them all out. I had my head down for about 5 minutes, writing all this stuff down, putting it on the table. And then I kind of look up and I kind of surprised, I looked around the room and everybody was like, I don't know what my typical day is like. You know, I don't, you know, everybody was kind of confused and they were stumbling. And I was like, what are you talking about? This is, you know, this is, I can tell you what I'm doing at 10:15 every single day because I stick to a certain thing. And I found out what it is. So I found out that was unusual. I thought everybody did it, but they're not. So my superpower is actually discipline. I am very, very disciplined. I wake up, I do the, you know, unless a, you know, something explodes or there's a fire to put out in the business, I, you know, I get up, I go to the gym every day. I almost never miss it. You know, I have breakfast. I check emails for 30 minutes from 8:30 to 9. I work on deep work from 10 to 12, take a 1 hour break. I mean, you know, and I've been doing this now for 12 years. So my superpower is discipline. It's super boring. But I've also practiced martial arts most of my life. So I'm guessing maybe that's where I came from. But that it's what gets you ahead. You know, for building my businesses, people ask, do you have any hacks or tricks? I'm like, my hack is work hard for 10 years and then you got it. I mean, you know, nobody likes to hear that.
No, but discipline is a superpower. It is something that you're able to say, I know that this might not be able to, you know, might not have the results I want tomorrow, but if I keep at it, I'm going to be focused. And I love that. I think that we... something for you to reflect and see of your own selves is actually something that you can help someone else. And I think you're already doing that, especially now with like a leaving a language with other people, you know, learning language. You have to be disciplined. You can't just pick it up and be like, okay, I'm going to be like, oh, la como estás. No.
I mean, most things in life, I think that's, I mean, I'd be hard pressed to find anything that doesn't take discipline to learn and to get good at.
Exactly. It's about getting and being a subject matter expert in what you do. Like, it's okay to know a little bit about everything, but being disciplined to understanding that, you know, being laser focused is important. I love that. I want to thank you so much for your time. I love what you're doing. I support what you're doing. All my listeners out there, you know, you see the journey that it's something that we don't sometimes understand where our passions come from and where our purpose comes from. And then we start looking in hindsight and saying, oh, wow, how these all things connect. Look at that in your life right now and see the things that drive you, the things that give you purpose, the things that make you get up in the morning, either for your children or for your family or for the future. And don't let just society or people tell you no, or even COVID that's being a hot mess.com right now. Like, don't let that get to you. Just know that there's opportunities. And I want to thank you again, Ray, for being on the podcast. Hasta la próxima y hasta la 15 de la mañana. I'll see you guys next week. Thank you, Ray.
Gracias, Alicia.
De nada. Chao. Wepa. Thank you for tuning in. Show us your love and join the conversation on one of our ruedas sociales, social media. Leave a podcast review and be sure to tune in next week. ¿Y qué ahora? What's next? Check out our website and volunteer today. We have so many virtual volunteer opportunities. And remember, you can be a part of the change in a changing world. Hasta la próxima. Besos.